This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
You just said that you didn't want this to come out at this time, but some of these things were said on the record. Did you all, you and your captain, did you think it was like more useful for the time period when you did have the reservations before you came in and had the meeting and decided this was cool? Was that something, those conversations that were on the record, did you think maybe this is more useful for that time period when you were considering some other options or at least trying to create some different avenues?
I wouldn't say there was times of, you know, it being more useful. I think, you know, at that time of all the things that were going down, the timing of it, you know, it's not ideal. But, you know, we're here, it happened, and you know, we learned from it.
That is Caleb Williams in response to Seth Wickersham's article that came out previewing his book and what Carl Williams, Caleb's dad and agent, had to say about his comments and their thought as a team before the NFL draft.
Yeah.
When Caleb was taken first overall.
Yeah, he had to answer, put him into the fire, because Herb Howard said, we're going to ask these questions today.
That was Herb Howard who asked that question. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score, and Herb is kind enough to join us in studio. Herb, good to see you. What was that day like yesterday for you at Hollis?
That was a really cool day. Practice went good. It was the first time being outside to be able to see Coach Johnson with the whole team, and it's a little bit different outside than it is inside the Walton Payton Center, as you guys know. But I thought that part of it was pretty cool, just to see everybody out on the full field and the grass and all that. But then the press conferences, you got to hear from Coach Johnson, you got to hear from Caleb finally, which should have happened a week ago, right? That should have happened last Wednesday at the first opportunity for him to address the media. Just get out in front of it. I'm kind of done with it, to be honest with you, but he had to face those questions. Relevant or not, those questions were going to come. And so the sooner they put him in a position to do it, the better off it would have been. He's great at that. He's going to stand in front of the podium and answer the questions with good detail and confidence. And he does that very, very well. So there was no reason in my mind to hide him from it or delay it. It was going to happen whenever he took the podium anywhere. So I'm glad he got a chance to get out there and do it. I personally didn't go into it with any notes to ask him anything. I didn't really have a question about it. But he came and did something that he's never done before, which was come with an opening statement at his press conference. And in his opening statement, he said that this was a bad time for it to come out. And then that just made me want to ask him, well, when was the right time? When did you want this to come out? And I assume that was when you all were trying to find other avenues to get to Minnesota or wherever. But it comes out a year later, and now you got to deal with it.
And see, I took that as part of the, when you say, well, what did they mean by nuke the city of Chicago? That's how I took it. I know that wasn't addressed yesterday by Caleb, but I took it as, if we wanted to nuke the city, we would have just run all this, gone down all the interview tours, done all the public speaking out in front before the draft, where it would have forced Ryan Pohl's hand either to say, despite knowing that this man does not want to have anything to do with you, you're going to take him anyway and see what happens.
Listen, this is not a nukeable city. This ain't that. Like, don't play with us like that. You know what I mean? Somebody told him, like, hey, this is not the city. Chicago, Philly, like, let's not play that.
There's certain
here.
Places,
I mean,
right?
People try to do it on a daily basis and use us for agendas, and look what happens. We're all still here.
All the time. And so I think that I genuinely think he had a good meeting with Ryan Pohl, and they came out of it at least more comfortable than they were before the meeting, that he could come here and have sustainable success. And so I think that's ultimately the route they took. Since he's been here, he seems to have put in the work to become great.
Now, you said you didn't really have any questions going in. Now, I had not the only question. I wanted to hear how he handled it.
Sure.
But I was confident he was just going to be like, yeah, that was before I came here. Now I'm here. Because he's done nothing in an actionable way since being drafted by the Bears that would indicate he didn't want to play for the Bears.
Right.
That was my overall stance. But it left me kind of hanging, that last quote from the article about the film thing. I was like, I need to understand what you mean by this, because this sounds horrible. And he explained it, and I was like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. It also changed the timeline, right? So I was going back to pre-draft process. You talking about who wasn't watching film with you. How long were you behind the scenes talking about these people? Like, you know what I mean? So that changed the timeline, but listen, every time you come into the league, you're going to have to learn things. As a rookie quarterback, as a rookie receiver, whatever. What really blew my mind the most out of everything that was said at the press conference yesterday, and I thought they were all phenomenal, except Montez. He don't really be trying to talk to us like that.
He was pretty
He's got the guard up.
Yeah, he can be much better, you know, at his locker, one-on-one, something like that. But in those forms, he's just not – he's just answering as quickly as he can and move on.
Sir, you make too much money. Like, we need more answers from you.
Is that part of it, though?
Or just more sex?
But you know what I'm saying? Yeah, not that you make too much money in general, that you make too much money to not be talking to us about stuff. Yeah. Like, that's, we want to know. We want to know what the best thing is for you. We want to know what your viewpoint is.
Sure.
You are a valued member of this team. The team pays you like you are.
Yeah.
And so tell us what you're doing and let us in on what your viewpoint is. Mm-hmm. That's how I felt about it.
But I wonder if the lack of production plays into the fact that he doesn't really want to talk like that because he knows people are looking at him like, yo, we need more out of you. Is that, or has he always been that way?
No, I think he referenced that, you know, at some point during the press conference that he didn't have the year he wanted to have and the team didn't have the year they wanted to have. And so he's just looking forward to moving on and having something to prove. He said it'll be in the back of my mind that I was not as productive as I wanted to be last year. And so I think he's in a pretty good space. He's just not that type of person that, you know, that's going to blow anybody away at the podium. And so I think he was just more so being who he's kind of been most of the time. Like I said, you catch him alone, catch him at his locker on a certain day, he can be a pretty good conversation. But at the podium, that ain't his thing.
Which is funny because I don't feel like there's a sentiment where, yeah, we wanted to see more production out of you and your story. But at the same time, he gets a lot of credit for doing what he did when he came here.
Sure.
Like, he still has a lot of that capital built up with the fan base.
Yeah, he's got to be – listen, he's one of their most important players, like, on the team on the whole 53. He's got to have a really productive season if the Bears' defense is going to be what Coach Allen hopes they can be and if this team is going to be what they hope they can be. So I think everybody still feels pretty good about having Montez Sweat. I think most people know he was dealing with some things last year, and he continued to show up week after week and, you know, at least take the field. But you got to have that game-changing production from one of your premier players.
Well, and I'm still wondering, big question-wise – how is he fitting into Dennis Allen's defense? Is he going to have the same rotation? You know, is he going to have the same amount of playing time? That's my biggest question in all of this.
One of the more interesting things he said, Layla, yesterday was that, you know, he said Coach Allen is very – I just lost the word that fast, but it was like complicated. Complex. Complex was the word. He's a very complex person. I think he was ultimately referring to the defense and what he wants them to do. And so I think they're all kind of just going through this period of figuring out what their role is going to be in this defense and how – if at all, it'll be different from things that they've experienced in the past.
So it's a filling out process. Yeah. What was the biggest thing that you took away from watching yesterday and just in general since we've had this off-season program kind of going? What would have been your biggest overall takeaways?
When we talked to veteran defensive tackle Grady Jarrett, who the Bears acquired this offseason last week, he said that the coaches are holding them to a high standard. He said Coach Johnson is the leader, and it's across the board, offense and defense. And then he said all of these coaches, they're not coming off of it, right? They're going to keep the standard, and it's going to be high. And you continue to see that. We saw it last week. You saw it again this week. And it's not just Coach Johnson. It's Coach Allen. It's Coach Bieniemy. It's all of them, right? You see them all doing the same things across the field. And I think that feels a little different. It's unfortunate to say because it's NFL football, and it should look that way for everybody, right?
How different?
Significantly.
Yeah,
you know, we heard Coach Eberflus and his regime talk about we aren't going to walk past mistakes. We aren't going to walk past mistakes. And then they walked past mistakes. And then later they're like, oh, we should have addressed that in the spring or in the summer. Yeah, you should have. They are actually addressing these things as they happen. Coach Johnson sent them back into the huddle at least 3 or 4 times yesterday. Like, nope, get back in the huddle. And so I asked him that in the press conference, like, what exactly are you looking for before you can allow them to actually approach the line of scrimmage? He said, it should look a certain way. It should sound a certain way to let me know we're ready for business.
Well, and I don't know about you, but then I think it was part of that very answer where Ben Johnson said, if it doesn't look right by training camp, then we have to reassess. Mm. Like, do you know that comment he made? I rewound it like a couple times. It was late at night, and I'm going, what do you mean when you say that?
I think he's keeping everybody on their toes. I mean, his introductory press conference, he talked about guys having to get comfortable being uncomfortable. I think he wants them uncomfortable. I don't think he wants anybody secure in their spot or what they're doing. We're going to do what I tell you to do. You're going to do it the way I tell you to, or everything is on the table.
Well, I also think that we heard a lot of I don't know if you want to call them lies, but I think we heard a lot of covering up for things that were not indeed fixed, just like you talk about when you said Eberflus said that they weren't going to overlook mistakes, and then they did. I remember the cadence issue being a clear issue.
Yep.
And then in training camp, they're like, oh, it's fixed. And I'm like, is it fixed or are you saying it's fixed? And there are countless times during the season where you can point and say, it was not fixed.
Now, you heard it through training camp. There was one instance in particular, and I'm forgetting who said it. I feel like it may have been DeMarcus because it just seems like it would have been DeMarcus Walker. But Caleb's going through his cadence, and right in the middle of the play before the snap, he's like, get that weak ass cadence out of here. Like, and it's just like, you can hear DeMarcus say that on the thing, on the field. And it's like, yeah, this has got to get better because these veteran D linemen aren't buying it.
That's discouraging what you're saying, but also it's encouraging to know, one, that era is over.
Yeah.
That is in the past. And to already hear people describing Ben Johnson's practices, and these aren't real practices with pads. These aren't even the real training camp deal yet.
Yeah.
But to hear it already has to be encouraging for not just us as bystanders, witnesses, media members, but also for the players themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, when we kind of cross this line of demarcation to say, okay, we're here now, and it sounds like it's going to be later rather than sooner.
Mm-hmm. No, I think, listen, the players asked for this last year. They were all talking about accountability and the coaches not holding guys accountable when they make certain mistakes. Well, now it's going to be here, right? And these coaches seem intent on doing it every single day. Coach Harris, Coach Randall, they all seem intent on holding you to this standard every single day. Case Keenum came to the podium. He said, coach is not going to allow you to come in this building with anything less than your best on any given day. And I think that ultimately is going to force all the players to rise to the standard and ultimately put their best product on the field on Sundays, and that's what we all want.
The comfortable, uncomfortable thing, going sure. back to that introductory press conference, I think that's great, and here's why. Because ultimately, and we saw it last year play out in real time,
yeah.
there's going to be very uncomfortable moments beginning, middle, and especially at the end of football games, and you want to know that you have the mental wherewithal
yep.
as a football team, yep. the individuals as a collective unit, to meet the moment.
Yep.
And last year we saw, you can say it was on the coaches, that's fine, but overall, it wasn't like somebody on the field called a timeout in
sure.
Washington.
Sure.
You have to be able to meet the moment. And I think Ben Johnson and this particular staff, the veteran presence of a Dennis Allen as your defensive mm-hmm. coordinator, mm-hmm. they're going to be able to meet moments.
Yeah, Coach Johnson referenced that yesterday. He talked about the mental fatigue that happens over the course of a four-quarter game, and you still have to be able to not just physically, but mentally meet the moment when it matters most, and the Bears didn't do that on the field. They didn't do it on the sidelines a ton of times last year.
Well, and also, as you were saying, when they don't even know what's wrong, to be able to call the timeout and pause.
Situation like, of football.
That's it. That's the issue, too. How many times do we spend asking who's got the veto power here? Who's got the right to say timeout? Who is allowed to call one? Or remember, even Jalen Johnson. Jalen freaking Johnson did not. He paused and had to think about it for a second. Because that was another question that we didn't necessarily know the answer to.
There was neither a point. Did he.
Yeah, and there was a point in practice yesterday. I'm standing on the sideline. The receivers are right here. It's a team drill, 7-on-7. It may be even 11-on. But either way, Antoine Rundle-Lell is coming past, and it gets to like third and whatever, right? And they're trying to drive. And DJ Moore is on the sideline, and Caleb's on the sideline. I think the twos are in. And Coach Rundle-Lell goes, okay, what are we thinking right here? He turns around to those guys and like, what are we thinking right here in this moment? And Caleb approaches him to say what he thinks, and then DJ's taking a knee kind of in front of us, and he yells out what he thought it should be. And coach is like, yeah, that's what we need to be doing. That's what everybody needs to be thinking in this moment as we approach this 3rd and 6, trying to get into field goal range before this clock runs out.
Well, Herb Howard. Herb Howard joining us live in studio from the Bigs Media, Bears reporter. He was at Hallis Hall yesterday. He's at Hallis Hall seemingly every time. Packs a overnight bag, snacks, all the things.
He lived there.
And he's kind enough to join us here on Raheemy and Harris as we talk about takeaways from this early moment in the offseason program where the Bears finally stepping to the podium, including Caleb Williams. And I'm just so glad that we're at a point where the initial Caleb thing is behind us and we can kind of focus on other things, even if it's Caleb related, where his development on the field.
So what I was going to say too is that it's important that you point out DJ Moore and him being the one to speak there, because Patrick Finley asked a question about DJ Moore yesterday.
Yeah,
you know, that's a discussion that a lot of people had, was that video of him going off the field and then coming back on and running a go route the next play. That's something that people have discussed. DJ Moore has also discussed it. We bring it up when we're trying to figure out who is in on this, right? Sure. You're trying to figure out who's bought in. So if he's the one saying that, I think that that says a lot about what we can make out of the willingness for people to participate.
You got a lot of guys that are hungry to win, but not a lot of guys who've actually done it. DJ doesn't know what winning football looks like or feels like. He came from Carolina to Chicago.
Has never played on a team with a winning record.
Much as I like DJ as a player and a person, he don't know what a winning team feels like. So, you know, there are things that all these guys are going to have to continue to learn. Jalen Johnson doesn't know much about it. I mean, sans one seat, like, he doesn't know much about it. So these are guys that are going to lead this football team while they're also learning how to set the standard for these guys in terms of creating a winning culture. That's why it's really good that you bring in a Joe Tooney who understands exactly what this looks like with multiple franchises, and hopefully he can bring some of that in too as well.
Well, and I appreciate you bringing up Joe Tooney. I think we've talked about it as a group, you, me, and Marshall, that his veteran presence might be one of those times too where when the bad looks really bad,
yeah,
you need somebody in your position group room to say, it's not as bad as you think, or this is something we can overcome. Because I wonder how much that was there last year.
Doesn't seem like it was there at all, right? You had the horrific loss to Washington, and then they were never able to recover from that. And it's like, okay, somebody has to be able to say, let's just reset, let's calm down. Sure, coach was wrong. Sure, Tyreek was wrong. Sure, the offensive coordinator giving the ball to your backup center on the goal line while you're down is wrong. Like, all those things are wrong, right? And it cost us a football game. Now, how do we reset and get back to the team we were when we were coming back from London 4-2?
Yeah, and Caleb brought up 4-2 yesterday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He made sure to bring that up.
Yeah, I mean,
unfortunately, they finished 5-12.
Man.
Listen, Layla, they're 1-0 in 2025.
That they are. Against the Packers, no less. The biggest team you want to be 1-0 against.
There you go. Caleb's undefeated at Lambeau.
I look at this right now as this period where you can be optimistic and it can be unlimited optimism. You can also be pragmatic and understand how difficult the road is ahead.
Yeah.
And looking at the schedule last year, and we talked on schedule release day, just kind of cemented, hey, it's a last place schedule in that they are playing the weakest schedule based on last year what happened.
True.
It is a much, much, much more difficult schedule than they want the one they played last year because of who is on the schedule.
Right.
That's just rotations.
Right.
And I wonder if our expectations are realistic.
Depends on your expectations, Marshall. What do you think they got?
I think they can go 7-10.
Okay, I think that's legit. I think I got them at 9-8. But I think it's going to be such a contrast between home and away. I think they have to take care of business at home in such a way. They got 8 home games. I think they got to win 6 or 7 to even get a chance to get to 9 because the road is a gauntlet, man. You got the 3 division games, sure, but you're going to Philly, you're going to Baltimore, you're going to San Fran. Like, these are tough, man. Like, so they got to be ready to play against these teams on the road. And if it goes the way I think it may go on the road, then they better be damn good at home.
Also, now that it's a post-fact note, did anybody think that Brock Purdy wasn't going to get over $50 million a year?
No, that's the price.
I mean, when you consider who's getting paid over 50 in the league, like, he had been to a Super Bowl, that's going to change the price.
Yeah. People have an idea of what quarterbacking should look like, and I've been saying this for 2 years now, and it just needs to look like winning. That's it. Like, there's a lot of different versions of it and a lot of different styles to do it. He wins. He commands his guys. They believe in him. He understands what they do well. He gets the ball out of his hands and into their hands. That's all you got to do. It doesn't have to look like this or like that. He wins.
That's why Joe Flacco got paid all the money he got paid.
Indeed.
After they won the Super Bowl. I get that. I think what you just brought up, Layla, is a great point because let's be honest. We are in a window right now.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb Williams is on his rookie contract.
Oh, it's now.
If you don't get it done now, there's no guarantee it gets done because of all the other people that are not going to get paid, not going to be retained. You better hope you finally have talent in the pipeline because we have yet to see that from the Ryan Poles era in terms of people who you can say, oh, that guy, Ryan Poles drafted him.
Yeah.
And forget about all pro.
Yeah.
He got selected to the Pro Bowl, even as an alternate. I'll take alternate right now.
Yeah, we don't. That's a very good question. I mean, it's one we have brought up, you know, before when it came to which bear out of the Ryan Poles draftees do you think could be a Pro Bowler? I think that's another discussion.
While you've got him on your rookie deal, you've got 3 guys that you got DJ over 100, you got Montez right at 100, you got Jalen's is like 80 or like you got to be able to cash in now because if you end up paying him 300-400, that's it. He's out there by himself now, and that's That's not going to bring a Super Bowl.
Never mind the fact that this is also the first year of a new head coach's offense. And oftentimes, as we've seen in this city, that is when you are the most potent.
Yeah. True. Because people don't know them yet, right? People haven't had the chance to scout them. And we'll see what that looks like the first time through the division versus the second time through the division. We'll get a chance to see how people make adjustments to this particular offense and how closely it resembles what they did in Detroit. He talks about building a thing from the scratch, but I'm sure – listen, he has an ideal version of how he wants to play football, and I'm sure it looks similar to what he did in Detroit. So we'll see and how the NFL gets to adjust to that.
Herb Howard is joining us for another segment, kind enough to do so. He's in studio. He was at Hallis Hall yesterday, got to see a lot of coaching, has already let us in on some inside stuff that we didn't get to see. And I want to ask him about a couple of other people who talked as well and what your takeaways were. More from Ben Johnson, I think that's very important. Case Keenum also in that mix. So we will talk about it all with Herb. More Bears talk next. Rahimi and Harris on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
There's a certain way that the play needs to get communicated in the huddle. There's a certain way that the break should sound to us around us that means that we're ready for business and we're ready to get going. And if it doesn't sound that way, then we're just not going to allow the practice to go south. Fatigue is something that we're going to combat. The longer practice goes, the more fatigue guys get. And the mental toughness has to come through of still doing the little things correctly. So that's a part of it.
We have more coming up with Herb Howard in this segment, Herb of the Bigs Media. That was Ben Johnson yesterday talking at Hallis Hall after the Bears OTAs. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. And even in that little segment of what Ben Johnson said, when he talked about we're not going to let the practice go south, I don't think that Matt Eberflus was guilty of this. And I don't think the Bears were last season. But how many times have you heard coaches be like, we had a great week of practice? We had a great week of practice.
It's become cliche, right?
Absolutely.
And it's especially like, I as a sideline reporter, I think it is a necessary job. You can make yourself useful. And there are so many times where sideline reporters are saying, oh yeah, so-and-so said they had a great week of practice. It's almost like the opposite is true. Like when they want to go out of their way to tell you they had a great week of practice, maybe it's because they didn't.
In my time on the Bears beat, I've never known them to not have a great week of practice.
Or incredible.
Never known them to not have a great week of practice. I made that joke standing on the sideline yesterday at practice because it's just, they say it all the time. It's like, wait, you've never had a bad week of practice? Like, if you play football before at any level, you're like, we didn't really bring it this week. And you go into the game, and maybe you win, maybe you don't, but you're like, we weren't really sharp this week. Guys were kind of lethargic. Like, it was. But the Bears, no, never.
That's any sport. If you played organized sports, you know what a good practice is and what a bad practice is. Just like you know what a good game and a bad game is. The only difference is the good game, bad game. There's actual numbers up there to tell you how bad or how good it was.
Well, that's what made Kerry Wood so funny, because the first thing Kerry Wood always says every time the anniversary comes up of his 21 strikeout game is he's like, I had a terrible bullpen.
Yep.
He was always the first one to say that about that game and how he made history. And then he's like, well, let me tell you about what happened to begin with. It was terrible.
Well, the electricity might have been off then, but the power went up once he got on the mound for real.
That kid was untouchable, man.
Remember, like, watching in my college dorm like it was yesterday.
For real.
Yeah, 20 batters is just unfathomable. And when you consider that he will also up the ante by saying how bad he was beforehand, it's like, did you get mad at yourself? Is that how you got to that point?
You know what was great about the Kerry Wood thing? It was like a lot of sports can be, when you're watching something, it becomes addictive. Like when a player goes on like an individual run in a basketball game and you're like, I can't walk away from what I'm looking at.
Because, not for one second.
I need to see what happens next.
Yeah, you have to. And I felt that way about that whole time. Like I thought that, you know, Kid K and Mark Pryor and Big Z would dominate the top of that rotation for a decade. I was like, this is going to be so fun for so long. And then elbows just aren't made to do what their elbows do.
But that's also why you have to really, really appreciate what you see from anybody, any team in the moment. Because ain't nothing destined to last forever. And it's not destined to last till tomorrow.
It's really, really not. You assume that it is. You assume the 85 Bears are going to win three or four. You assume that the 16 Cubs would win three or four. And it's like,
But I can understand why that happens in this city because Michael Jordan exists. Scottie Pippen exists.
That was the standard.
That was the standard.
And, and it wasn't just the standard for three, which would have been incredible. It was the standard for six, which makes it unfathomable.
Yeah. Like, take a little break.
And even with the Hawks winning three the way they did, you know, that puts it into perspective. It's funny because we had the conversation earlier, Herb, about how I was thinking, if I'm watching the Bulls, and the Bulls did what the Timberwolves just did.
Oh, man.
And they went to back-to-back conference finals.
Oh, well.
Wouldn't you consider that a success? Like, you would kill for that.
Yeah, I mean, look how finally we look back on the couple of healthy Derrick Rose years, right? Just that team in general and Joakim and all those guys and how competitive they were. And they could beat LeBron and the Cavs or LeBron and the Heat. It's like, they didn't really, but we still think finally of that era, however brief it was.
I'll say this. On that, if the Wolves were the Bulls.
Sure.
And they made it to back-to-back Eastern Conference Finals. The first thing, if today was that day, they'd be like, yeah, Chris Finch got to go. Chris Finch got to go. That's the difference.
Truth.
That is the difference.
Truth.
They'd be like, why can this coach not get them to the finals? They made trades to get better players.
True.
They got rid of Cat. Now it must be the coach's fault.
Never mind they ran into the Heat or, in this case, the Thunder, who are stacked. Like, the Pacers don't want that smoke either.
Oh no, I think it's Oklahoma City all the way.
Yeah, for sure. Did you see how they was locking them up yesterday? That was insane.
I know everybody talks about their offense.
Like, never mind
they score 120, but their defense is outrageously good.
I think the best part was every time I looked up, if I looked away, I look back, deflection. They headed the other way.
Yep.
Deflection. They headed
another steal. You just hear Mike like, dang, they got him again.
I know. I should look up points off turnovers right now just for kicks. I know we want to talk to you about other Bears thoughts, but, you know, we're on a heater right now.
Well, no, but
and it's the NBA playoffs. Like, this is what we do, you know? Like, we love talking about NBA on this show specifically. I feel like that's one of the things.
And you love NBA, and you love the style of play in today's NBA with the threes going up and down. Is that a bad callback I just did?
Amazing. That was pretty good.
No, listen. The Bulls are far away. That's what I learned yesterday.
Yes, they are not close.
Every time I look up, I'm reminded that the Bulls are indeed far away. And I'm looking at the points off turnovers if you haven't gotten to
less,
it yet.
Yeah, so. Less than I thought it was going to be for the T-Wolves.
Really?
19.
How many times did they turn them over?
They turn them over
19 times. Okay.
So but, that's why. Or,
no, what, so it's only 18.
Oh, it's 18.
Yeah, it's 18 points off
points
turnovers.
Conceded. They do it a little differently on this one. But yeah, I mean, that was it. They turned them over 21 times.
Interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I feel like that's going to probably come up when they play Indiana. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
But maybe Tyrese will have another game like the last one he had where he's like, I don't turn the ball over. I get triple-doubles without turnovers.
That was insane.
Yeah, he can be really efficient. When he's on his game, he can be really, really efficient, not turn the ball over. He can get 25 points on, you know, 12, 13 shots, and it's like, he's just really efficient.
And he'll still have 15 to 20 assists
because
that's what he does.
Yep.
Okay, so getting back to a couple points at House Hall, even though I love talking hoops with you both, I want to know what you thought about what Case Keenum had to say, because we understand that he was also practicing with the twos, and I think that that's an important detail here, especially when you talk about the guy being 37 and he nearly hung it up, and this was not him hanging it up.
Nah, I think that, first of all, he's just a really, really good addition to the team and to that particular room. The Bears did not have a veteran quarterback last year, which I think was a bit of an oversight. I don't care how much you like Tyson Bagent. I like Tyson Bagent too. But when you're talking about onboarding a rookie quarterback to be your franchise superstar, you need someone to kind of hold his hand and walk him through what it looks like to be in the position that he's in. And Tyson knows no more about that than Caleb does. And so I think not having a vet was an oversight last year, but I think they brought in a great guy for that spot this year. I think Case Keenum understands his role in this team. He's going to be a good sounding board for Caleb, not only during the week, but when he comes off the field on game day. Hey, this is what I saw. This is what was going on. This is what coach is saying to you, right? Because coaches say things a certain way, and then somebody else can kind of translate it for you a different way, and it'll hit different. So I think he's going to be really, really beneficial to this team. I think he also is a competitor, and he said, listen, they didn't promise me the number two job or anything like that, but I'm going to compete for it, right? And I think Tyson's a great competitor too, and we'll see how that ultimately evolves. But I think just having him around is going to be really, really beneficial, one, to Caleb, but two, to the total team. It's a guy who's been there before. He's won some big games. He's been in some big moments. I believe in him if he has to go in there and play.
I like specifically the fact that he just worked with C.J. Stroud and knows what a young quarterback
needs.
C.J. Stroud in year two, now you've got Caleb Williams in year two, and let's just say Caleb Williams was not afforded what C.J. Stroud was allowed to do as a rookie quarterback. So now we're kind of making up for it. And also the cheat code piece of this is the fact that he can be with Caleb and Tyson if you want and do things that the coaching staff can't because of NFL limitations as far as the rules go for the offseason programs.
I was very – what I was referencing earlier that blew my mind the most out of everything in the press conference yesterday. Case Keenum said that when he came into the league, having played in that prolific air raid offense in Houston where he put up astronomical numbers, said he came into the league and he did not know, amongst other things, he said rookies don't know what they don't know. He said, I didn't even know that you could run one play on one side of the field, go to the other side of the field, and flip and run the same play. I said, what?
That sounds insane.
No,
what? I think Adam Hogg was sitting next to me. And I looked at him, and I said, and he's looking back at me, he's like, did he just, wait, what? Like, because it's, you get to the league and you don't know that if you go on the left hash, you can run trips right, and then you can go to the right hash, run trips left, and run the exact same play. You didn't know that?
Because they don't have the talent at that level. Like, even on those teams he had, I really appreciated him saying that.
I appreciate him saying that, too. I think it's extremely impressive that he's sustained the career that he has, having started from that big a deficit. That is a huge deficit to come into the league from, not even knowing, like, we could just flip this play and run it the other way. It's no problem.
And he threw for the most passing yards at the time in NCAA history.
Yeah.
Like, that's what makes it so crazy.
Seriously.
So we have Herb Howard in studio with us here on Raheem and Harris.
I'm going to get an autograph before I leave, too. I just want you two famous singers to know that.
Yeah, you're crazy for that. He's the Bears beat reporter for the Bigs Media. We're talking Bears, amongst other things as well. And I just, looking overall, as far as the other people that you heard from yesterday, was there any comment that stood out that was as eye-opening as maybe that Case Keenum one was?
No, I think just the consistency of coach's message, that's really starting to hit home to me. This isn't coach speak. He's not putting on. This is who he is, and he seems to be the same way on the field as he is at the podium. The things he's saying at the podium, you're seeing them on the field, and I think that consistency – it's starting to hit home with me, so I know it has to be starting to hit home with the player. Like, this is just who this guy is. So this idea that he's going to turn and change, we better just get used to who he is. And I think that is really, really important. You don't see a lot of messages changing. I think that's really, really important. And then I was just impressed once again by how Caleb handled himself under pressure, right? I mean, he didn't want to answer none of that stuff. He didn't want to deal with it. Doesn't really matter a ton at this point. But he stood in front of it and he dealt with it. Maybe a week late, but he stood in front of it. He gave good answers. He gave detailed answers. And hopefully, you know, he's able to move on from it. So I was just impressed by coach and QB1.
Are you under the impression that it was his decision to speak, or that the Bears were going to have him speak, or the Bears told him don't speak just yet? Because he did mention Ted Cruz by name in terms of how they strategized addressing this.
I'm sure they did a lot of work on how they wanted to go out and address it. And I'm sure they probably did some mock press conferences and assumed some of the questions. I don't know whose decision it was for him not to have spoke. What's today? Today's the 29th, 28th. So why didn't he speak on the 21st, right? Which is when I would have had him get out there and dress it and move on. I don't know whose decision that was. Bears, Caleb, I don't know. I just think it was a bad decision. It's not terrible, but just get out in front of it and get it done. The kid is good at this thing. Prep them, send them out there, have a 10-minute press conference, and move on.
Yeah, and that's it. To me, it was every day that it gets closer to the season, it becomes more of an issue because it's taking away from what you're trying to do.
His teammates are answering his questions. Last Wednesday, when he didn't speak, Coach Johnson spoke, Grady Jarrett spoke, and I think Joe Tooney spoke. Neither of them were on the team last year. They all got questions about what Caleb said about whether or not he wanted to be on last year's team or a part of this franchise. It's like, I don't know. I didn't even know Shorty. Like, I don't know. Like, so
he didn't even go here.
Yeah, it's like I have no idea, but those are the types of distractions that you can just bury real fast.
Herb, you know, you've given us an appropriate amount of guff for singing the seventh inning stretch. And I joked about how we had the mic in front of 40,000 people and I should have been like, and extend Kyle Tucker. Something crazy. You know, like whatever sports thought that you need to communicate to the most people at once.
Sure.
Do you have one of those? And if so, what would it be?
I don't know. Like I've been sitting, I have no idea. Could I yell down the red line to the White Sox? And I'm a huge Cubs fan. It's go Cubs, go for me all day. But I'm from the South Side. I just want to.
I'm about to say you got a Sox hat on right now.
Yeah, because I'm still a Chicagoan and I'm born and raised on the South Side, so I can rock a Sox hat. But I've been a Cubs fan my whole life. But I still would yell down the red line, just like sell the team, bro. Like this is.
Wow.
This is foolishness.
To Jerry?
Yes, this is foolishness. Nobody wants to deal with this anymore. Megaphone straight down the red line
and that's
to 35th.
Not even your team and you're
it's
like,
not even my team.
And sell the White Sox.
But I would like to go to a game. I don't go. And nobody goes. It's like you get a free White Sox ticket with a Whopper at Burger King. Like it's ridiculous, man.
But you can't have that your way right away.
You cannot.
I would like to have a win.
It would be.
Are you
nice.
Kidding? I'm ready to get rid of. I'm ready to say Andrew Benintendi's value on the trade market after yesterday.
My goodness, it's ridiculous. It really is.
It's just the time. It was the time for a ridiculous hot take. Come on now.
Yeah. I don't know.
You're welcome to hang out with us for the next segment if you want.
Hey,
you don't
if
have
you guys
to.
Will have me, I will chill.
Okay, because it's more NBA chatter, so let's you seemed it. Interested. Charles Barkley had some words about who the next face of the NBA might be or should be. So Herb will help us suss it out next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris. Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
We have some news for you. Join The Score in Circus Sports Illinois. Tomorrow, we're outside. And it might even be good weather. And even if not, we're outside. 10 to 120, we'll be broadcasting live from the parking lot outside of Wrigleyville Dogs on Clark. Fund the Circus Sports Illinois app to be eligible for some limited edition swag and promotions, and food will be provided.
Do we get food too?
By Wrigleyville Dogs. We're going to take some.
Okay.
I like
your attitude.
A hot dog on a Friday before a Cubs game
I
in
like
the
your
summer.
Attitude.
Well, almost
Parts
summer.
Parts of the job. Y'all got to take the food.
Yeah. I mean, you're welcome to come, Herb. Stop by tomorrow starting at 10. It is all brought to you by Circus Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Download the Circus Sports Illinois app today. So, Charles Barkley, and we were talking about this in the break.
Mm-hmm.
We had been discussing this a couple days ago, Marshall and me, when it came to this is a changing of the guard in the NBA. You know that.
Absolutely.
Who's going to be the face of the next generation?
It's tough to identify. You look at, you know, who the front runners would be, and you maybe look at guys like Ant-Man, SGA, you talk about Jokic. But I don't know there's ever been face of the NBA that wasn't an American-born player. I thought maybe Giannis for a little while, but LeBron was still reigning. And you look at it now and where it's going to go, and I don't know that any of them are so interesting off the court, right? Like, you look at, like, people would watch Michael Jordan do anything. People would watch Kobe Bryant do anything.
LeBron.
Didn't have to be back. LeBron, anything. And now, I don't find these guys that – maybe it's because I've gotten old. That's probably a large part of it.
I love that Herb says he's old and he's younger than us.
Not just that, though, but, like, hey, Tim Duncan exists with all the rings, but you've got to have personality, charisma. Yeah.
Well,
gotta be able to raise them up.
You also want to be. You have to want to be in public in the basketball space.
Right.
Like Jokic, for example, I feel like with Jokic, he is really interesting off the court. But his off the court is in Serbia, where he owns like majestic horses that look like they're from fairy tales because they're so pretty. You know, like that kind of stuff. Yeah, like Jokic. I think Jokic separates it, and he's like, "This is my job.
Sure.
This is not the entirety of my character."
Absolutely.
He has good work life balance.
He
we
does.
Should
he
all
does.
Strive to
he
have
does.
The work life balance of the Joker.
Yeah, but I'm sure that's tough. Like y'all probably walk around and people ask y'all about Chicago sports all the time. It's like, hey, I just did that for 4 hours. Leave me alone.
Nah, I'm incognito with that. I have a hood up, hat down. Don't have to worry about that.
They're constantly trying to make us pay attention to them when they're like, I'm lying about you. Why aren't you replying to this? Gee, I don't know.
True.
All right, so let's listen to what Charles Barkley had to say on the matter of who the next face of the NBA should be.
OKC is the best team in the NBA. I've been telling y'all that for 2 months. Hey, ESPN, I love you guys. Don't try to make Anthony Edwards the face of the NBA. The face of the NBA is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Joker, and Giannis. You can't give it to people. They have to take it. and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is taking it.
Okay, that's courtesy of TNT, Inside the NBA, and all that stuff.
Charles shouting out his future home.
He right. just yelled out three non-American players. So let's start with that. Can the face of the NBA be a non-American basketball player?
Yeah, I think so. For the simple reason of us even talking about Jokic in this space, and we haven't even brought up Luka. SGA, absolutely, because he played college ball here.
Well, the Dream Team was 92. So we're 33 years from that.
And what happened the last time we sent some Americans over to see what they could do against international competition? The most stacked international competition that they've ever faced. What happened at the end?
Americans took care of business.
Okay. And that might be the last time they do. Let's be very clear.
But that doesn't mean one person can't become that. Just because they can't field, no one particular country can field a whole team good enough to beat the United States, doesn't mean one particular player can't come over here and dominate the league in a way that says, this is my league.
Okay, so if we're crossing people off the list, can I
you want to go process of elimination?
Yeah.
Sure.
I'll start with Jason Tatum. Love doing that.
Why?
Because he's not. He had his moment and couldn't sustain anything. Couldn't even get off the bench at the Olympics.
Yeah, that was kind of bogus. I don't know what was wrong with that.
I think that was the case, was that he was still the junior to other people's senior. But when you consider, like, even what he said on the microphone and how he performed in the finals last year.
No, I love Tatum. I think he's a great future Hall of Fame basketball player, but he's not going to be the face of the NBA.
Is Jaylen Brown too good?
Jaylen's too...
Not to be the face. Is he too good for Jason to be the face?
Oh.
Yes. That also, because only one of those guys is an NBA Finals MVP, and you know which one it is.
Mm. Does market size come into this? Is that why Wemby might be out?
Yeah.
Wemby and maybe SGA too?
No, I think Wemby's just hurt. Wemby's blood clot issue, I think we'd be having a different discussion. And we will be having a different discussion because he's 19 or 20.
But is he interesting? Because he plays in the same place that Timmy did, and Timmy's maybe one of the top 10 players of all time. But as soon as he stepped off the court, you're like, who's Tim Duncan?
He didn't even want to goodbye anything. Think about how he retired.
Yeah.
Dirk was kind of the same way in that respect. Well, Dirk had a little more pop and stuff. Yeah, still.
Dirk, yes. I mean, we don't have anybody like on D Wade's level right now from an American standpoint. Right. But you know what? If the Pacers found a way to win this series, the Eastern Conference Finals, and then turned around and found a way to win the NBA Finals,
could Tyrese be? I don't think so.
He does love the WWE, too. You know that.
He does,
he's got fun hobbies.
He shows up where Kalen is.
Yeah, he's at the Fever game.
He puts his face out there.
So maybe I saw Tyrese Halliburton walking.
You don't sound confident.
In the Viagra Triangle, like on the street with his I think now wife, and I just struck up a conversation about how hey, I covered you, but you never saw me in real life because it was the pandemic in Sacramento. Oh, that's the conversation. Yeah. He's like, oh yeah, that's cool. He was super relatable, down to earth dude.
Yeah.
And he does seem like he's got that kind of one of us vibe when it comes to how he conducts himself, you know, even on social media. I also think like KD could have been that guy, but
he has no interest. He just wants to play basketball.
Fame, he doesn't even brush his hair.
Fame got to him.
Fair.
Also, what's the latest KD hot goss? Do you remember when all the sons were asked who their favorite female athlete was, and he like very much declared into the camera Angel Reese.
Mm.
I don't think that's a thing, but I could be wrong.
I'm being like half silly, half curious. It's like fun space.
I think they've clearly drawn a line in the sand, and people are coming down on one side or the other, whether they need to or not. People are on the Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark thing. It's like, let it go.
Yeah,
I think it's brilliant for the W now. I think for the W, it's absolutely brilliant. It's Bird and Magic for the W. But as far as people actually getting caught up in it, it's like, just let it go.
Well, the funny part is to me is take that opening weekend and then you know what was happening throughout all the games?
What's that?
They were showing the awesome Aja Wilson shoes ad. Like, her shoes are fantastic.
Well, first of all, two things. Aja Wilson is the best basketball player in the WNBA.
She's so good.
Caitlin Clark is not only the face of the W, she's also the face of basketball right now, period.
There you go. Oh. That might be the answer to the conversation right there. That might be the answer to Charles Barkley's question right there.
But you need someone from the NBA to be the face. Well, I guess.
Not necessarily.
She's just the face of basketball in America.
The more I think about it, the more that might be the right take. Caitlin Clark is probably the face of
American basketball.
Dan and I talked about it way back in the day. I was like, yeah, that's if we're being honest with ourselves, that's what with a fading LeBron, fading Curry, and not like fading like they can't play anymore, but just they're not on top.
Yeah, no, it's a whole different generation of viewership. Like, it's just,
are we not giving Jalen Brunson enough credit that he could be that guy? And you know, he went to Stevenson too.
He plays in New York.
Hometown kid, plays in New York. Is he that interesting off the court?
I think he's interesting.
Does Tibbs allow you to be interesting?
I don't know. Well, he did clutch.
He did with the Bulls.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that particular question. I just know of the pool of people that Charles Barkley suggested, Giannis would probably be at the top of that list because he actually is interesting off the court.
Yeah.
When he told us about discovering double stuffed Oreos for the first time, you were like, I can relate to that. If you had never had one until you were like an adult, you would flip out. You would flip out. When he won the championship, went to the drive-thru and got like the 40 piece or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, these are all relatable things.
That's regular dude stuff.
Yes.
I also appreciate him even talking about the importance of big markets in the NBA versus non-major markets in the NBA.
That got people in Chicago all hot and bothered.
But it's also the concept. It's understanding what that means. Like, not being from here is good when you think of it in those different aspects. Like, what that does mean to somebody like him.
Do you guys have any dark horses that you could see becoming... Could be Cooper Flag one day.
I was thinking about that very thing.
If he is who they think he is, that could be a thing. But we haven't seen that.
Cooper Flag, Washington Wizard, bringing basketball back to... Oh, no, that's not where y'all want him to go?
No, I don't care where he goes. Like, he's not coming here. I don't care where he goes, but we just haven't seen white American superstar dominant NBA player before.
If Cooper Flagg does become the face of the NBA,
other than Bird,
the Mavericks will make sure to trade him and explain why he's not good enough for the Supermax.
The last time a white American basketball player was this popular, or however you want to say it, is probably J.J. Redick in college, right?
I'm talking about the NBA, though.
I know. I'm just trying to think.
We've seen dominance on the college level. We've seen, you know, the J.J. Redicks and Christian Lakeners and Mike Dunleavy or whomever, right? Dan Dickow, whoever you want, right?
Like... I go with Jimmer.
Jimmer for that? Sure. All of that works, right?
Oh, but Jimmer had a moment? Absolutely.
At the NBA level, for whatever reason, it just hasn't happened for white American-born players. Now, we've had Dirk come over here and dominate the league. We know what Jokic is doing right now. But for whatever reason, the American, it's not really happening.
That's what
here. This
conversation is really about, is whether it can shift. If the shift to Europe is going to be complete once Steph, LeBron, KD, and some of these guys retire, or if Anthony Edwards and the like can pick up the slack and keep it moving.
I do think SGA is really interesting. He just has the problem that he's really interesting in Oklahoma City.
Yes.
Like, I'm telling you, like, a random regular season press conference with SGA is just as compelling as playoffs.
I got to go back and watch. I got to do some more off the court work on SGA just in terms of how interesting of a person he is, because he's a phenomenal basketball player. He's a great looking young man. Like, he speaks well. He handles the press. I mean, the post game stuff really, really well. But
I'm telling you, like, he's really good about talking about his process. And I think that is he's philosophical when it comes to basketball in a way that I think we appreciate, you know? And that stands to be something to be respected. Herb Howard, thanks for joining us for this next segment on a major NBA speak.
Thank you all for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Lawrence Holmes and Matt Spiegel, we transition next on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.